From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
This has been a difficult session, maybe a very difficult session. Over the last few years, nothing seems to be simple, nothing seems to be easy. It's just one difficult, complicated issue after another.
I mean, let's face it, the biggest winners here in this session were the taxpayers who were spared the certain extension of the income tax. Clearly, that issue is not over. I think that the Democrats want to make the tax increase permanent.
And if Governor Rauner was to win and become the governor, I would think that he would have a real tough job of managing the government with half a year without any revenues. And about a month or so after he gets sworn in, he has to give a budget for the following year.
Yeah, I tell you what, if this election goes in the direction I hope it goes, we're going to be in for the mother of all lame duck sessions in January.
Those are the legislative leaders from the Illinois General Assembly, Speaker Madigan, Minority Leader Christine Rodonio from the Senate, Senate President John Cullerton, and House Republican Leader Jim Durkin. The legislature wrapped up its work and has left town for the summer, at least. We'll discuss what Governor Quinn calls an unfinished budget and what lies ahead on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, reporter, State House reporter for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and our guest, Mike Riopel, political editor of the Daily Herald, published from Arlington Heights. Welcome to our show, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Well, we heard Speaker Madigan start talking by saying it's so difficult. Why is it so difficult, and why is every issue difficult?
Well, it's difficult because there's an election in just a few months, and after that, there's an election 2 years after that. So there are a lot of controversial things that have been talked about, finding votes for a tax increase when a lot of his members are up for election in a couple months is difficult. A lot of those members, just a couple years before this, put on candid questionnaires and said in campaigns that we want the tax increase from 2011 to expire. So now, just 18 months from making those promises, it's tough for them to come out and vote the other direction, even if the budget having trouble, as it always seems to be. We talked to somebody right at the end of session who said, a Democratic lawmaker who said, we didn't realize how bad the budget was before we got here when we made that promise. Still, we made that promise, and so it was hard for them to find votes.
And as he talks about this difficulty, though, we had a guest last week on the show who said, maybe House Speaker Michael Madigan wasn't so keen on helping Pat Quinn get that and some other issues through at this particular time, and they were glad to just put that off until after the election.
Well, you have to remember that, you know, House Speaker Mike Madigan's chief responsibility, I think, as he sees it, is reelecting a Democratic majority in the House. And it's interesting, that was the very last thing that he got asked of by reporters as he was going back to his office after the House had adjourned. I believe it was a Tribune reporter said, do you think there's any chance of losing the Democratic majority in the legislature at the election this fall? And he said, no, I think we'll, the legislature will remain under Democratic control. And right there is all you really need to know about how this session went. The speaker, it's not very difficult to look at this in a way that it benefits the speaker because, as Mike pointed out, he has so many members who have been vociferously against extending the tax increase that they're now in a stronger position heading into this campaign. Of course, from a policy standpoint, that doesn't leave state government and the finances of state government in a very good position. But from a political standpoint, you can see where he's coming from.
And also, John Cullerton, the Senate president, kind of referred there maybe a Freudian slip. He called it Bruce Rauner, Governor Rauner, in the first sentence.
I wouldn't say Freudian. I would say sarcasm, or the Senate president has a very dry wit that maybe doesn't always come across on the radio. But I, you know, his point, I think, is well taken, and I think that's what you're getting at too, Bill. Why, I think a lot of Democrats feel like, why, if Bruce Rauner is out there saying how terrible we all are in Springfield and how we've mismanaged state finances, and he thinks that he can manage this state budget without that tax increase being extended, good luck. Let's see how he does. So if he does happen to win this fall, as we heard Senate President Cullerton say, he's going to be walking into a significant deficit for the second half of the fiscal year, that, you know, from January to June. And then it's going to be terrible for the next fiscal year that starts in July.
Conventional wisdom would hold right now and doesn't. And it's just conventional wisdom, which not always doesn't always contain wisdom whatsoever, but is that if the Democrats win the governor's mansion in November, that they would approve a tax increase in the fall or in January. Otherwise, it would be, as Jim Durkin said, the mother of all lame duck sessions, which we need to kind of – what does he mean by that?
Well, I think what he means is that after the November election, maybe Democrats who had lost and wouldn't face voters again would be more inclined to support a tax increase. I think, you know, a lot of people thought that in May, well before May, they thought that in May it went without saying that the tax increase extended would be extended. That conventional wisdom ended up being wrong for many different reasons. Doing so was very difficult. I think after November, if they still want to do it, it will still be very difficult. It won't be the slam dunk that maybe some people are trying to imply that it will be, because number one, you'll have people who just won campaigns based on whatever they were going to say, and don't face re-election again pretty soon. And you know, it's going to be a complicated question no matter when it happens. Perhaps lame duck session makes it a little easier. I would suggest it's not obvious that it will happen, as is being implied by some people.
Well, and I would just say that Senate President Cullerton did say, you know, it doesn't have to be the extension of the income tax. Illinois does things differently than a lot of other states with, for example, I guess letting people deduct property taxes, or we don't tax retirement income. I mean, there are other ways that, you know, you can imagine people who made a promise not to extend the income tax could be persuaded maybe to vote for a different sort of tax structure. And we've even heard Bruce Rauner, the anti-income tax candidate in chief this election cycle, saying that he would consider even taxing retirement income.
As we leave the legislative session in the rearview mirror, the governor is going around, one, touting his support for education and school funding, and two, he says it's unfinished business, and that budget is unfinished. What is Pat Quinn going out on then, the campaign trail this summer, touting that he still wants a tax hike?
I think he touts the fact that his argument that if there isn't a tax extension, that bad things will happen. You know, he's not touting more taxes are good. You know, he's trying to set up a stark choice between not having the tax extension and getting a lot of very deep cuts that could affect schools and care for the disabled and all kinds of things like that. It's the same very clear choice he tried to outline in his budget address. You either extend taxes or there will be huge, devastating cuts. Of course, May came and went, and he got neither of those two things, which puts him in a tough spot.
And Bruce Rauner, his statements so far post-session?
I went back and looked. I think the end of session, he had a statement. Just he had, and this is actually bears a little discussion. He was very quiet the entire last week of session, said almost nothing. And then on the very last day after the final budget passed, he put out this fascinating statement. And I just kind of condensed it into the key words that like a political consultant would tell you to lose a lot. And it was job destroying, tax increase, robbed, politicians, broken, dishonest, career politicians, phony, tragic, failure. So those are really all you need to know about what Bruce Rauner thinks about the budget, or at least is saying to, you know, voters about the budget.
And I think much of the public probably doesn't realize to that extent that a state budget was passed, obviously.
Right, and they don't connect things like Misericordia and, you know, their local schools, you know, that maybe they don't even realize how much they're dependent on the state for funding. So the state budget, I think, is very abstract to people, and obviously we're very tied up in it, and probably people who listen to the show are more tied up in it than your average voter, but the average person out there on the street is not even thinking about state government, I would imagine, and they're just going to be barraged, I imagine, at some point soon by the millions of dollars of television advertising that is going to start later this year, and that's how they're going to view the campaign.
That House Democratic lawmaker we mentioned earlier said as much when we talked to her. Brian and I were in this same little group that her voters, her constituents, were not engaged in this process. They're not panicked about either the cuts or the tax hike at the moment. They have other things on their mind. They have real lives, and they're not engaged. And she went as far as to blame Quinn for not doing a better job of making his case for the tax hike before they had to vote for it. She said he should have been doing it way before the budget speech, giving himself more than 2 months to try and make this case to people who generally aren't engaged at the moment.
Well, and let's remember that he put off the budget speech until after the primary election, and he would not answer what he was going to do about the tax increase until after that primary election had passed. So there was really just this very compressed 2-month window from when he unveiled this in his budget address until they were trying to get it done by the end of May.
And doing it the first time took much longer than a month. It took, you know, he tried to do it, and it wasn't the full 2%, like it were 2 points like it was this time, but there was multiple sessions it took last time to get it done the first time.
Charlie Wheeler, you have been observing this process for a long time. What was your take on the spring session of the General Assembly?
Well, I think I would disagree with Senator Redonio that taxpayers were winners. I think in the long run, they were losers. And the reason I say that is because, as we've discussed earlier, the state, as difficult as things look now, this budget that was cobbled together technically is balanced in the sense that the authorization to spend money in the coming fiscal year that starts July 1st authorizes spending less money than the revenues that are expected to be on hand. Now, what it means is we're going to not be able to pay as many of the old bills, because for the last several years, we've taken a big chunk out of each fiscal year's new revenues coming in and used it to pay bills left over from the past years. It also means things like programs to help senior citizens stay in their homes are going to be cut. There's chances that there are going to have to be reductions in operations at state prisons. School districts are only going to get 89 cents on the dollar that the state is owing them under the general state aid provisions. And the following year, as has already been said, is going to be dramatically worse, because part of the way we were balancing the budget for FY15 is by borrowing $650 million from all different accounts that state government maintains. That has to be repaid. And when you put it in the base and you go to do next year's budget, that's $650 million that you're not going to have. So you start out with that hole, then you lose, what, $4 billion in income taxes, and it's going to be almost impossible to do. There will have to be new revenues, and there also will have to be cuts.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, Illinois lawmakers gave themselves a pay raise in a way. We'll talk about that.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, The Daily Herald's Mike Riopelle, and I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Brian Mackey, while lawmakers didn't necessarily vote themselves a pay raise, they did something this year. They didn't vote themselves a cut.
That's right. And this is kind of a complicated way of looking at this. But what they've done in, I think, the last five budget years, including the one we're in now that ends at the end of this month, the end of June, is they've said that lawmakers are required to take one furlough day every month. And they vote on a law, they pass a law that says the state controller shall deduct the equivalent of 1/261st of salary per month from the law. Basically, that's 261 work days. They take out one day of pay every month. And so what this amounts to is about a 4.6% cut in pay. It applies to their base salary, as well as most of them get at least $10,000 extra if you're a committee chairman, and even more if you're a member of leadership. And they were able to then take that under their campaign mailers and say, I voted to cut our pay. We saw Democratic State Senator Mike Frerichs from Champaign, who is also running for treasurer. In his announcement video for treasurer, he pointed out, I led by voting to cut my own pay. It's one of the things he touted in his campaign video. And so this year, you go back to last year, and Governor Quinn, of course, vetoed lawmakers' salaries, and the General Assembly leaders took him to court and won and said you cannot diminish a lawmaker's salary. And they thought, well, since we won with that argument in court last year, maybe we shouldn't turn around now and once again vote to cut our own pay. So that's where you ended up with this year. They did not take that action, and now we're beginning to see some political heat from that.
And you see, as you mentioned, Mr. Frerichs going to use try to find some political advantage or gain by saying he's donating that share of what would have been his pay cut. He's going to give that to charity now.
Right. And we've heard other lawmakers who say they're looking to see if they can somehow get the controller to deduct it anyway and not even take it away from the taxpayers. Because, you know, as they all like to say, as I talked to a former panelist on the show, Chris Mooney, political scientist with University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And he said, you know, they all want to look like they're volunteering. We're not in this for the money. We just want to help the people. Think of the people. So that's why it's an advantageous message as they see it. To get out there.
Well, and I would point out too, if I'm a lawmaker and I'm truly concerned, I'm pretty sure that the Illinois law would allow me to write a check to the state of Illinois for however much money I want and make that contribution to the state's general funds.
And either that or giving to charity, things that could happen in private. They don't even need to mention it to the public that they're doing it.
Well, but the point is to mention it to the public.
There were a number of things going on last week when it was all said and done. We recorded at midday last week, so the session still had some hours to go. We ended up with some ballot propositions, a non-binding referenda. Can you give us a quick summary of what the voters will see on their November ballot as a result of what this legislature did?
So there will be at least two constitutional amendments that will be on the ballot, one about crime victims' rights and one about voter discrimination. Then there's those non-binding ones you talked about, Bill. Let me see if I can think of all of them. There's the minimum wage one, whether minimum wage should be more than $10 for people over 18. There's the
millionaire's tax.
Oh, millionaire's tax, 3% on income over $1 million. Then there's the one that deals with insurance covering contraception, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, which is already actually the law in Illinois. But, you know, it was kind of a big issue with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. There was a Supreme Court case. So, you know, if you can get Democratic voters to the polls with a BS question on the ballot, why not do that?
Yeah, I mean, all these three are, especially minimum wage and the millionaire's tax, speak to the national Democratic push to try and highlight the wealth gap in America. Madigan tried to do the millionaire's tax as an actual bill. Other people tried to do the minimum wage increase as an actual bill. Neither of those were going anywhere. It's right before an election. So these will go on to the ballot as non-binding advisory questions. They have no effect on the law. But in theory, according to some, perhaps it would gin up Democratic turnout at a time when I think a lot of people think it could be a national Republican election.
Now, there are a couple of proposed ballot measures out there still facing legal challenges as well. And these were some that came from Citizens Group, and citizen referenda are quite difficult to get on the ballot. So what's the status right now of one that would impose term limits on lawmakers, and among other things, and another one which would change the way the state draws its political maps for elections?
The term limits plan from Rauner appears to have enough petition signatures to make it onto the ballot, but is facing a lawsuit in court over whether it should be valid. It looks like it'll survive the petition challenge. The elections chair director was telling me the other day there are three ways for these things to get kicked off. It looks like the term limits one is going to make it through the first two, but might have but still has that court challenge. The redistricting amendment, at the end of the day, Friday, the people who are pushing the redistricting amendment have to provide evidence that they will indeed meet the signature total, because the board's initial review says that they're short of the minimum they need. So it's up to them to prove that they're not.
And they've had to spend the last 2 weeks going around. They have about 3,500 signatures that are the board says we can't find these people in our voter database based on their signature and the address that you provided on the petition, or that they provided on the petition. So they have to go to individual counties and election authorities, Chicago Board of Elections, and try and rehabilitate, they call it, and say, no, this is valid. Here's this person, and they did live at this address, and they were registered to vote at this address. And it's so interesting on how what little details these can turn on. I've heard that the Rauner petition circulators would have people sign and then print their name, whereas on the independent maps group, they would just sign. And so it makes it just that much harder, maybe, for the State Board of Elections employee who's sitting there staring at a computer screen for hours and hours every day trying to search the database and figure out how accurate these signatures and names are, to actually just be able to discern what the name is.
And one thing I noticed when I happened to see one of the people that was circulating petitions in front of a convenience store for the term limit, when I heard them ask every single person, first question was, are you a registered voter? So they were trying to make a good effort to get that screened a little bit in the initial signature phase.
And even so, these things are just so complicated, and the fact that they needed so many signatures makes it even harder. I mean,
600,000 signatures, I think, is what the term limits group turned in.
In the primary, one of my favorite, favorite stories, I guess, was a congressional candidate in the suburbs almost got kicked off the ballot because a notary was using his stamp incorrectly and ended up getting to stay on the ballot. So it's that kind of technical stuff that makes this even more complicated than just getting a ton of signatures.
Now, because Mike, why would we want to make it easy to get on the ballot in Illinois, right? This is the kind of barrier to entry that the establishment sets up to try and keep people from running for office, and they make it challenging and complicated.
Mike, you mentioned in a column this week there is some paperwork and cost and mailing that comes into play because there are things on the November ballot now.
Yeah, there's a state law that any time you have the question of a constitutional amendment on the ballot, the Secretary of State has to let people know about it. The law is intended to so that you don't go into the voting booth and plan to vote for a bunch of people and not understand what these questions are above all the people's names. So what Secretary of State Jesse White has to do is send out 5.4 million mailers in four different languages to every household in Illinois explaining these constitutional amendments. Because there are multiple this time, at least two, maybe four, it's going to cost, they say, up to $4 million. Now, if some bids come in low, it might cost a little less. If some of the amendments get kicked off, they might cost a little less, but they have to send out mailers in, based on census data, in English, Spanish, Hindi, and I forget the third one or the fourth one. So,
Polish?
No, Polish they can do online only. Chinese, that's the other one. Sorry.
We'll turn it now real fast. We'll take a few moments for notes from the field, and we'll start with Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the University of Illinois' Fred Gerritz came out with a flash index for May, and it shows that the economy in Illinois continues to grow, albeit slowly. It rose slightly in May to 106.2, which was 0.2 above the level in April. And that's significant because there had been 3 months of decline. The economy was growing, but it's kind of slowed down. And Professor Gerritz attributed that to the harsh winter that we've had. And so, at least in that area, slow but steady, we're still recovering.
Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I want to turn back to the legislator pay story. Did they cut their pay? Should they cut their pay? And I kind of hate this story every year when it comes around because I talked to Chris Mooney, that political science professor we talked about before. He used to be on the show a lot. And he said, you know, this was part of professionalizing state legislatures in the 60s and 70s. We gave them longer sessions. We gave them a lot more staff, and we increased their pay. And, you know, to a certain extent, you only get what you pay for. I think it's one of the New England states gives their state lawmakers $200 for a two-year term. But this has been a long problem. It goes back in history. I recently watched that John Adams series on HBO. And, you know, George Washington was paid $25,000 as president, and John Adams made $5,000. And it was even a little plot point where Abigail, his wife, was complaining that that is not enough to live on.
We cannot get by on your salary. $5,000 a year is hardly worthy of such an office.
So next time you hear one of these stories, just, you know, ask yourself, what caliber of person do you want? Do you want it tends to be very wealthy people if we don't pay them enough, or it's you know, retirees. If you want to attract people who are in their mid-career, then, you know, consider that you do need to pay lawmakers if you want professional people.
Mike Riopel, what's your note from the field?
The ongoing case of former state representative Keith Farnum. He's a Democrat from Elgin. He pled not guilty this week. It was unexpected to 4 counts of child pornography. He was indicted of having child pornography on a state-owned computer. Some very inappropriate videos are in the indictment. So he pled not guilty. He's since left the legislature but has started collecting his pension. How his case ends up would probably affect that.
And Charlie Wheeler, I want to come back to you for one other note. You have some wildlife-related information for us.
Yeah, well, one of the bills that the General Assembly sent to Governor Quinn is one that would add to the list of protected species in Illinois gray wolves, American black bears, and cougars. And as Bill and I were talking before the show got going, back when I was a kid, you didn't even think about seeing deer in Illinois or Canadian geese, and now they're everywhere. And chances are that these predator species followed the explosion in the deer population, and they've gotten to the point that there's enough of them in Illinois that the conservationists believe there's a need to protect them from being randomly hunted.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Mike Riopel of the Daily Herald for being our guest. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for today's program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.